Sorry to interrupt, folks. That's going to be available completely.
Holy crap!
As we recorded it online at the Radio Statler archive, we have. We have some guests for you live in the booth right now, right this second. Yeah. You've probably been hearing us talking because all of our mics are open. Please, definitely, Cheshire Catalyst is a huge, huge friend of Radio Statler and a huge friend of Hope. So please definitely take the time and the opportunity to download and listen to that what was playing previously. You can get the whole thing with no interruptions and no people talking over it. Online at the Radio Statler Archive. Please make sure you use just visit radio.hope.net. It should be pretty easy to get to the archives and download a copy there, as well as a copy of all of our other wonderful content from this weekend. So I think we're almost ready with our guests here. Side Pocket and Evan.
Check. Yep, I can hear me.
Yeah. You can use this. Actually, I'd say if you could move over one seat.
Yeah, this is the really
to,
good
to your right, to that beautiful one, that would probably be really nice.
Yes. Because, you know, if for people, if you're listening for the first time, oldies will know at Radio Statler that while we do have a schedule, and we usually actually keep it pretty good to what it is.
We do okay.
But, you know, things happen. Speakers get abducted. And
people get distracted.
I was abducted by aliens last night.
Yeah.
They prodded and poked and prodded me. It's horrible.
Did Neil Armstrong tell you the time where he almost got abducted to PumpCon? Against
abducted
his will?
PumpCon against his will.
He had a different arrangement. He wasn't supposed to go, and they offered a ride, and they didn't clarify, so he thought they were going to drop him off along the way, and instead they took him halfway over there, so he was late to his other professional thing.
I was abducted, and they read me Vogon poetry.
Oh, no. Well, how are you?
Okay, you officially win. But, we have a guest here. Would you you've been here before on the radio, but just in case first time listeners, could you please introduce yourself, sir?
Hi, I'm Evan, and I'm the executive director of Vintage Computer Federation.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of very. I love that title, by the way, for the because it's a real title. But I often have those things where like I'm told as like, oh, I'm the senior lead advisor for technology, and like it sounds a way more fancy and like I'm professional thing than it actually feels like.
Before Vintage Computer Federation existed. When we first started coming here 6-8 years ago, we were just a computer club called March.
Yep.
And that was just a club.
I missed the logo. I love that logo.
It was a great logo. Yeah. We were just a club, plain and simple. So mm-hmm. I was president. Now we're a proper 501c3 nonprofit. There's mm-hmm. a board of directors, and I'm executive director. I'm the only employee. Yep. I report to the board. Mm-hmm. Every nonprofit has an executive director, so it's a real title now.
So before I get in, because I do want to talk a bit about the Vintage Computer Festival, because I've attended it a couple of times. It's fantastic, by the way.
Thanks.
Always go. I always hate when I'm forced to miss it. Like, if I can't get out of work that week. What does your organization do outside of the festival?
Okay, so, again, your organization is Vintage Computer Federation.
Right, the Federation.
So we do three things. First of all, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. Mm-hmm. We're a national group for collectors.
Nice.
Everything from mainframes of the 50s to 8-bit computers of the 80s.
Nice.
And the main three things we do are, one, we have a hands-on computer museum mm-hmm. at our headquarters in New Jersey, where we only accept donations. We don't buy artifacts. Mm-hmm. We're selective about what we take, and we do hands-on restoration focus.
Nice.
The second thing we do is the festivals. Mm-hmm. So we have a series of events nationwide called the Vintage Computer Festival. Mm-hmm. The third thing we do is we have a website called the Vintage Computer Forum, mm-hmm. which is the largest general-purpose discussion board on the internet mm-hmm. for the hobby, for collectors.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious here, no offense because I'm impressed by this. How did you find out about the Vintage Computer Forums that you were the largest one? Was it were you comparing data? Or?
Well, what I see in my eyes. So there are plenty of, there's a massive forum with zillions of users for Commodore. Mm. And Apple and Atari and everything else.
But you guys cover everything.
And we cover, there's really only two forums mm-hmm. that are general purpose vintage computers. Mm-hmm. One of them is an old fashioned listserv.
Yep.
And we're the PHP forum alternative.
Forum is, yeah.
So as a result, the other one's called Classic Computing, CC Comp. Mm-hmm. And they have a older crowd mm. because they're a listserv.
Yeah.
We attract more, you know, we're growing the hobby of newer members, younger people, et cetera, because they find us.
Right, to keep everything going along, because, you know, this, you know, if it dies with you, it's like, what, you know.
Well, but it's good. It's not dying with us because, you know, now with Facebook, there's tons of Facebook groups and everything.
Right.
With thousands and thousands of members. And when I got into the hobby, I'm 43.
Mm-hmm.
When I got into the hobby in, like, the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
you know, they would scoff at an IBM PC from 81.
Right.
Now, there's, you know, folks in their early 20s, wow, retro, Windows 95.
Right.
Like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Windows 98, just like when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, what do we do with this? You know, I mean, Windows 98, it's crap in his phone when I was in graduate school.
It kind of makes me wonder, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, museums out there and these, like, carpenters and metal makers, wood makers making spoons and little figurines and like, hi, like, this makes me money, but this is such shit. Now they're sitting in museums.
Right. And you know,
centuries later.
There's a couple telltale signs that we're getting old. The one is, there's a Facebook meme that shows a guy our age, 30, 40 something, and the guy is showing a little boy a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Yeah.
And the kid goes, cool, you 3D printed the save icon.
Oh.
It's funny, but honestly, how would a child know what that little box is actually
it's
supposed
funny,
to represent?
It's, yeah.
You know, and then. Yeah. There was an Apple commercial, an iPad commercial a few weeks ago I saw on TV, where the mother says to the kid, what are you doing on your computer? And the kid goes, what's a computer?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God, we're screwed.
That's what you think,
But we're not, because we have young people. We have people in our 20s who are discovering PDP-11s and Altairs.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
No, I've been,
so we best we can to enforce that. I should say.
I've actually always been impressed where even like with my hobby with phones, you would think, oh, payphones, like that's two guys in their 60s just blathering all day. But believe it or not, like every time, for example, our group brings the payphones out, all the kids love them.
Yeah.
They're just why they either have never seen one or they've only read about it on Wikipedia and they've never seen
one. And I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard of Connor Kukowski, the famous 18-year-old who got a mainframe.
Yeah.
So about once a month for the last 2 years, people email me, hey, have you heard this? Connor's in your area. You should contact him. Yes, he found the mainframe through our list. He's one of us. We play Cards Against Humanity with Connor.
So
it's funny.
A little preview bit, and I have actually a good question that follows this, just a little bit of my story of like where you feel old. And again, I'm more on the young side. It's just in terms of what I'm talking about, video games have made so much of a progression that it's really easy to... It's like what they say in modeling. It's like in real life, I'm 31. In video game years, I'm dead. You know, it's like that sort of, I feel familiar.
I have a face made for radio. The reason I'm not on Hope TV.
Yeah, so that's all of us, you know. That's here on main radio set. Except for Johnny. Johnny's, I think, pretty decent. I showed up. It was, I believe it was 6 years ago. And Nintendo New York was still Nintendo World then in New York City. It's a giant store of just all Nintendo memorabilia. It was the E3 weekend when they were showing games, and so I was going to be there in the line because they had previews of If You Can't Make It California. They had some there. So I'm in the line listening in, and I was talking about how, like, it's amazing that it's like, you know, you start just playing games when you're young, and then you just blink, and all this stuff has progressed, and, like, the media gets smaller.
I got my Atari VCS for Hanukkah 79.
Yeah. And I'm just like, and I'm nodding up and down like, I agree with this and stuff. Yeah. And then the group of kids, I didn't realize they were younger than me, that they were like, And so one of them was like, it's insane. Like, I remember when I was in early grade school, Super Smash Brothers Melee came out. And now it's, and I just slow turn like.
Right. Well, so our dream is to make the vintage computing hobby as big and prominent and public as the vintage gaming hobby.
That should be hand in hand right there.
Vintage gaming. I mean, our conventions, you know, have 1,000 people in a small little venue.
Right.
The vintage gaming collections rent out convention halls.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're massive
of themselves. Yeah.
So our goal is to make our hobby as big. And honestly, I grew up in the 70s, 80s. My dad collected 50s cars.
Yeah.
And if you pick 100 people off the street, maybe 60 of them have cars.
Yeah.
Even though most of them, you know, point A to point B, it's a tool.
Yeah.
Maybe half of those are car people.
Yeah.
But even among those people, that, you know, even of the first 100, they're aware that antique cars are a thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's heard of car shows.
Yeah, they know what one looks like.
Before Steve Jobs died, I'd be at a cocktail party. So what do? I run a vintage computer group. They looked at me like I had 7 heads.
Right.
After Steve Jobs died, I run a computer group. Oh, like old Apples and stuff. Yes, exactly. Suddenly people got it.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, the best two things Steve Jobs ever did were, one, convince Woz to quit Hewlett Packard and make a company.
Yeah.
And two, well, not to be rude, but die.
Yeah.
So that he made our hobby important. Now, yeah. I don't mean to sound like an asshole. I'm sorry Steve's gone.
Yeah, no.
But can I say that word on Hope Radio?
Yeah. We're not FCC, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, you're defined now, sorry. But I'm being facetious, of course, but it was wonderful for a hobby and very sad, of course, when Steve died, because suddenly the general public suddenly cared about computer history.
Right.
And it was an amazing thing.
Right, because, you know, even though, like, sometimes people argue about, like, what he did and stuff through history, he was part of that history.
Right.
So in order to look up him,
you know, we've lost plenty of important figures in computer history, but he was the first one anyone not in our field heard of.
Yes.
So when he died, suddenly people were like, oh, wow, you like old apples and stuff. I said, yes, exactly.
Yes, it's the same way.
But of course, we go back to mainframes everything here, not just epic computers.
So kind of get back on a little bit more on topic here. Important question to ask. What does your organization classify as vintage? For you to, like, let's say someone wants to bring in machines.
I believe,
like,
the Supreme Court said about pornography. I know it when I see it.
okay.
As a general rule,
yes,
we're 50s to 80s.
Gotcha.
There are exceptions. A Newton, a Sun, an SGI, and a, you know, late model Amiga, etc. History happens daily.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, a Dodge Viper, it's not an antique car.
Yeah.
But it's historically important because it's unique and different.
Right.
So not everything old is worth collecting and belongs in a museum.
Right.
Not everything new is automatically not worth collecting and doesn't belong in a museum. So we have plenty of modern artifacts because they're historically important, or we think they will be one day.
Yeah.
But as a general rule, among the hobbyists and collectors that make up our group, generally 50s to 80s.
Yes. So you brought up the restoration thing, which I feel like a lot of people for some reason don't know about. You guys do fantastic work. In fact,
thank you.
The work that probably most people at this con will remember was that we found Emmanuel's old machine that he started doing 2600 stuff on, that was one of the first machines to have a mouse. Not an actual computer mouse, but apparently, allegedly, a mouse living in it.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was the unintentional mouse upgrade.
Yes, that was the unintentional install. And so my question is probably really long, so I don't want, but could you generally describe, like, using that as an example of, like, the sort of refurbishing process that you did with that?
So I'll qualify this. I'm not the tech guy. I'm the historian.
Okay.
I'm the executive and the historian.
Yes, but just like the general process,
I've got guys for that, you know.
Yes.
So basically,
same thing with my equipment here at the radio. Like, I know how to move the knobs.
You're
and
the
speak,
DJ, but you're not the tech. Yeah. So if someone, I'll make an analogy, analogy again.
Okay.
If someone gives you a car that hasn't run in 10 years, maybe some spark plugs, fresh battery, new gas.
Right.
See if it fires up. What if someone gives you a Model T?
Oh, God, even you don't think of it that
the
way.
The point is,
yeah,
you don't just try to turn it on.
Yeah.
You restore it.
Yeah.
Take it apart, clean it, inspect the parts,
right,
etc. Then you might think about firing it up.
Right.
Same with a computer. If someone gives us a Commodore 64, we turn it on.
Yeah.
Worst case, you blow a cap, replace it.
Yeah.
We've got 20 more in a warehouse.
Yeah.
When someone gives you, you know, an example, a real example from our museum, a Univac from 1965, you don't just turn it on. You spend years rebuilding it. So Emmanuel's computer was somewhere between those. It was, you know, not all that exotic. We have a lot of experience with S100 computers, but it was an important computer.
Yes,
we didn't want to rush it or, you know, do anything half-assed. So we took it apart. Well, the first thing we found was the unintentional mouse upgrade. Cleaned that up as best we could. Took the power supply out. Brought it up on a Variac. Little by little, make sure no magic smoke was let go.
Right, because when the blue smoke comes out, that's the
and then you
the
take each card, you test each card individually on a known good machine.
Smart, yes.
Right,
exactly.
We have plenty of those computers. And then we slowly brought it up. The hard drive was another story. The hard drive was in bad, bad shape.
I heard it was a mess.
So we ended up taking, like, disassembling the hard drive. No disassemble. Johnny number 5, short circuit.
Yes, I know. I'm so into this.
And so we disassembled the hard drive, removed the platters, put them in the same model known good hard drive, and it still unfortunately didn't work. So every month or two, maybe every 6 months, I get a message from Bernie.
Yeah.
Hey, have you guys got the hard drive working yet? Emmanuel's getting kind of antsy.
We got a keyboard that has two keys, just N and O. The hard drive working.
He's asking,
and it's like taking forever. So
no,
it's like,
no. So one day, Bernie and Emmanuel, one day we will get to that. But anyway, so that's basically the process for these computers. And then inevitably, you know, you find bad diodes, bad transistors, bad chips, bad. Bent, memory bent chips, especially
wiring, yeah.
Bent pin, corroded contacts.
Yeah,
all sorts of stuff. And that's a 50,000-foot level. Mm-hmm. That's as about as deep as I go. Mm. But Ian Primus, Systems Glitch, et cetera, a couple of our guys who actually did that restoration.
Yes.
A funny story. When we brought the computer back 2 years ago, we were on stage, and I gave my five-minute, elevator pitch.
Yeah, I was there for that.
And I got a polite golf clap without checking with Ian, my tech guy. I said, and Ian here, we'll talk about how it worked.
Yeah.
He gets up there. He's, like, frozen. He's an introvert. He's like, I just fix things. And he got a huge ovation.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny.
This is a good scenario.
Yeah.
Just curious, because we have about 4 minutes left. What are some of the oldest machines that you currently have at your museum?
Okay, so the oldest full machine we have, oldest full computer we have.
I didn't say working or anything.
Right. Our oldest complete computer is a 1956 vacuum tube computer from Bendix called a G15. They made approximately 400.
Yeah, like 400.
They made about 400 about one a week from 56 to 64. We have what's believed to be number three.
How do you, were they like serialized for that, or how did you find that out?
It's a long story.
Okay.
We also have another vacuum tube machine from 1958, an analog computer, which was custom built one of one, custom made for MIT. That's pretty cool. We have.
What was it custom to do, if I may ask?
Well, it was used for the MIT Mechanical Engineering Lab as a teaching tool.
Oh, cool.
It was decommissioned in 70, sold to an alumni in Ohio, put in his garage.
I forgot,
45 years later, 3 years ago, his wife said, get this
out here.
Bleep.
It's like comic books.
Get this bleep out of the garage. MIT is their own museum.
Yeah.
He called the MIT museum, and they said, try those guys in Jersey.
Oh.
So the MIT museum people who we know, good friends of ours, called us. We're like, we'd love it, but don't you want it? They're like, now we're good. Okay. So we called the guy in Ohio and said, look, we love it, but it's in Ohio. And he said, don't worry about it. Great.
Nice.
So it's four racks of incredible analog computer. We named it George.
Holy shit. Nice. Any particular reason, or you just like the name?
Well, because it didn't have a name because it's one of one.
Right.
It was built by the George Filbert Company, which made the op amp. So, and also like Bugs Bunny, which my brother George is here.
Right,
you know?
Brother George,
We have a whole display case, a Locky Nice display case, full of individual components. Of 1950s vacuum tube era UNIVAC, but just components. My favorite piece, there is a flip-flop. A single flip-flop the size of a briefcase, a metal chassis the size of a briefcase, weighs about 10 pounds.
Yep.
On the front of it, there's two lights, two bulbs, and it actually says 0 and 1. For contrast...
Just imagine the stares that people
for
have.
For contrast, in your iPhone, a microprocessor the size of a quarter, a nickel, three or four bucks in parts from China, with approximately 6 billion circuits in it. This is one.
One, yes.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. When I was at the ENIAC talk, and I love when that was like, when he was doing the day, and that was highlighted of that, one of the great things about it is because of how of a base level it was, you could actually see the process going of these individual bytes.
Now, the
bytes.
UNIVAC that we have a transistor era UNIVAC. Ours is from the mid to late 60s. It came off a destroyer. For context, our UNIVAC has a dual tape drive that weighs about 1,000 pounds and has about 7 megabytes per 500 pounds.
I have a question. Do some of you guys, the guys like and girls, realize after a while that like your joints are getting worse but your muscles are getting better? Because I know from experience with a lot of retro equipment that you start bulking
up
really quick.
Well, we believe in the right tools for the job. We have a pallet jack and a forklift and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it does. My muscles aren't affected because I'm the boss. I'm not the
leader. Practice for that. So, one last question. Unfortunately, I wish I could have more time. I'm going to actually dedicate to make sure you have a good one next year, and I'll physically come over myself.
Well, it's my fault for not showing up when I said
it was
this morning.
I overslept and everything. But so, last question is, I was going to say too, but you can pick one. Was either the machine right now that you really would love to have in your collection at the museum, or what is a restoration that you're currently working on right now that you'd like to say over on air? You could do one of those.
Wow. Well, we're about maybe halfway or two-thirds done with the UNIVAC restoration.
Okay.
And that's going pretty well, but slowly.
Yeah.
I'd love to restore the MIT analog computer.
Ooh.
That'd be a pretty fun one to do. And we're building up to it.
Nice. I look forward to that.
We have a warehouse, literally, a things to restore. I'd love to restore our cray.
Mm-hmm.
This fall, we're getting another piece of big iron. And I can't say what it is.
Ooh, mystery.
But I can say it's 30 linear feet.
Jeez.
And it's coming from a DOD contractor.
Okay.
That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, that's a lot of paperwork, and I'm just picking all the people.
Now, as far as a favorite, I mean, that's too hard. I mean, what we're missing, rather. So, all the common stuff, we have 20 of. What we don't have, for example, we have 4 Lisa 2s. We don't have a Lisa 1.
Oh, yeah.
We have a cray, but it's a late model cray. We don't have an early cray.
Okay, yeah.
We don't have any SGI computers. Not SGI. We have plenty of SGI. We don't have any, like, what's the other supercomputer company that wasn't Cray? It's RF and S.
So,
No. It's escaping me now. We have lots of DEC, lots of HP, IBM, Wang, Burroughs. I'd love a Selby, but Selbys are unobtainium. You know, we do have a Mark 8.
Mm-hmm.
We have Altairs and MSI, so we're pretty good. What we need more than anything is volunteers.
That's important.
Yeah, we need lots of volunteers in our area. And the last thing I'd like to mention is we're a Vintage Computer Federation.
Yep.
So our website is victorcharliefoxtrotechodelta.org, vcfed.org, and at vcfederation.
Awesome. Well, I hope more people attend that. And you usually have the festival at your flight station in Wall, New Jersey?
Right. So our museum's in Wall, New Jersey. Vintage Computer Festival East
is at our museum
in the springtime. We also have Vintage Computer Festival West next month at the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley.
Nice.
And then in February and March, we have Vintage Computer Festival Pacific Northwest at the Living Computer Museum in Seattle, et cetera, et cetera.
So you're you're busy all the time.
There's one in Chicago in September, October, one in April in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We just had one in Rome not too long ago.
Oh,
we don't own them all, but we have the rights to the franchise.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're the franchisee.
If you're ever in those areas, definitely check it out, because trust me, even if half inch you go there once, it feels like walking to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, except it's old computers. That's been my experience.
Yeah, we do not have a Wonka Vader, but we're working on it.
Ooh, that would be nice to kind of upgrade. Anyhow, unfortunately, new panel's coming up, but thank you, Evan, for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
See you in 2 years, everyone.
Yep. Look forward to working with you pretty soon, actually.
Thanks. Take care.